So welcome to The Interim Whisperer. Our show is all about the future of work and innovation. My name is Isabella Johnston, The Intern Whisperer, if you didn't know that. And today my guest is Dave Jackson. He is somebody that I have known through PodFest, through Chris Kremitzos. I'm going to give Chris a shout out. I love Chris. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about him before he starts answering some questions for us. So Dave is a consultant and a founder of his own business, School of Podcast. And he is also the head of podcaster education with Libsyn. He'll tell us the background story on that. A podcast hosting solution that provides a full spectrum of services to podcasters. And other notable value that Dave brings to our listeners includes helping people, brands, and companies plan, launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. And I will be his guinea pig today. That means he's going to tell me what I should be doing to monetize this podcast, folks. Basically, he can help podcasters sound like $1 million without spending $1 million. So I'm loving this, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Looking forward to this.
I've been trying to get you, honestly, I've been trying to get you specifically for, you know, quite a little bit. I know we haven't known each other a whole lot of time, but I've seen your name all the time in PodFest. So I know you've been around, and I have this list of people that I'm always interested in having on my show that are part of the PodFest community. So I'm really glad that you're here.
Yeah, PodFest is probably my favorite event. When I go there at this point, I've been to all 10. It's kind of like summer camp. You go back and you make some new friends, but you catch up with a lot of the old ones. So it's a blast.
Yeah, I think I've been going half of that time. A good 5 years for sure. I want to say six, really. I think it's really six. But Let's talk about you. So tell us about yourself using only five words. And you're very clever. You have a whole phrase for us.
Yeah, I thought about this today. I love to help people is five words. That really does sum me up. In terms of motivation and what I love to do and what puts gas in my tank, James Cridlin from Pod News one day, he goes, "You really just like to help people." And I go, "Yeah." I go, "That's kind of just how, that's it. If you open me up, that's what makes me run."
Were you ever a teacher?
Yeah, I was a teacher for, it's funny, originally, I'll try to make this short. I started off with a technical degree and I was a copier technician who then had his manager go, "Hey, I need you to, we're going to make a special position for you. You're going to show people how to run the office equipment." And that was my first foray into teaching, which then they said, "Oh, you're really good at this. Would you want to teach computer software?" And I'm like, "Okay, is there more money in it?" Sure. And that led me to another teaching job and another teaching job. And what was funny is when you're in teaching, it's a little bit like radio where every 7 years, new management comes in and fires everyone. So I lost my teaching job and I went to get a teaching job and they're like, "Well, your degree's in technical engineering," because that was my degree. And so I actually went back to school at the ripe old age of 42 and got a teaching degree and went back to teaching, you know, a lot of Microsoft Office and QuickBooks and time management. And again, another 7 years rolled around, lost my job. But by that time I'd been podcasting 10 years. And I was like, "Where would I want to work?" Because I think everybody on the planet has learned Microsoft Office at this point. And so I called up some people at Libsyn and I knew one of the vice presidents and kind of jokingly said, "Hey, I'm available to work for you if you're looking for somebody." And he said, "Really?" And I went, "Yeah." And 20 minutes later, I was talking to the president of Libsyn and she's like, "Would you be interested in doing like level one support?" And I'm like, "Does it come with health benefits?" And she's like, "Yes." And I'm like, "Oh, yes, I would." And so I do that. And then the School of Podcasting has always been a super serious side hustle. It was really started to keep me in money when I went back to college. So it's always been kind of a side hustle, but I love it because now working at Libsyn, I see a much wider view of the podcasting space, which then helps me make great content for the School of Podcasting.
That is a very interesting story. And I loved how you wove that whole educational piece because it's not traditional education, but you went back to school and you made it so that it was traditional education. So you tied it in.
Yeah, it just was one of those things where they're like, "Hey, do you want to do this?" And I'm like, "Okay, what are my options?" And they're like, "Well, you either do this or you're getting fired." I'm like, because I was a horrible technician. And I'm like, "Let's do this." And it was just a case where I went from learning or teaching software. I worked in the newspaper industry for a while, teaching software to the newspaper people. And then it just, everything was like, oh, he's really good at explaining technical stuff to people. So it's just kind of evolved as life has, you know, kept going.
Really interesting. I love that the background was all in technology, basically. I mean, copiers, that was technology for sure, when we didn't have that. You know what's funny? This is a sidestep, but I always have to explain to people that are born, I would guess, in the 90s on up. Okay, do you know what CC stands for? And they go, I don't know, copy, I think. And I go, do you know what BCC stands for? And they don't know. And then I have to explain it. I said, back in the day, there was this device called a typewriter. And there was paper, and we had something called carbon, and we would put that between two pieces of paper and type on it before there was a computer. And they're going, really? This
right.
It's so funny, right? But it's not that long ago, right, Dave?
Well, I used to teach people how to surf the internet, and I go, well, before there was Google. And if I say before Google to somebody who's 30, their brain just fries. They're like, what do you mean before Google? But yeah, I taught people how to surf the internet and how to send email. I remember, you know, you'd have people pair off in an email class and I'm like, okay, now click send. And I remember this one guy in the front row was like, dude, I just hit send and it's in his inbox already. He's like, how is that happening? And it was like, what is this voodoo? You know?
Yeah.
So it's been fun to watch just, you know, everything get more, you know, just you can do everything. I mean, now we've got, you know, automated assistants that I can just tell what's her name in the tube from Amazon to make my grocery list. And, you know, everything else is, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder as we do less and less as humans.
It seems like it, right? That we're doing less and less. I think what we have to do is we have to keep learning to keep up with it now.
Oh, that's the one thing I learned just teaching software is if you're not learning, you're going backwards.
Oh yeah.
So it's just one of those things where I was at the library last night and I had not been in an actual physical library in a long time. I always do stuff online. And I was like, I forgot how much I love the library. Just, you just walk in, you're like, there's all this knowledge here. I just got to grab some and start reading. So yeah, it's, if you're not keeping up, it's, you know, that sidewalk, it's like the sidewalk at the airport, you know?
Yeah.
If you quit walking, you're going backwards. So.
That is true. I like these analogies very much. So where'd you go to school?
Yeah, I mean, I went to school here in Akron, but in terms of university, I originally Stark State was my, which is now, Stark State. It was Stark Tech when I went there. That's where I got my electronics degree. And then I went back to school at the University of Akron and got my teaching degree, with a kind of side note of specializing in technical education, because that was kind of that's my jam is tech teaching. So,
yeah. So when you went back to school for that, I'm trying to understand something because I went to school and my undergrad was English and I had to get certified to be able to teach in the state. And so that was the teaching component that I had to learn. Is that what you did? You had to learn how to be a teacher?
No, I had to go back and take other courses, which was kind of stupid at the time.
Like education courses?
Yeah. Yeah. I was taking, like, I remember I was like, I contradicted the head of the education department and they're like, when do you do this? And I said, well, I said, you should, she said, you should never ask a yes or no question in class. And I go, well, unless you have a class that isn't saying anything, I said, then you can ask them a really easy question, get them to answer, and then lead them to another question. And people are like, I can't believe you contradicted, you know, Dr. Jensrud. And I was like, I got experience. This is what I do. So it was kind of weird. But yeah, what I've never done, because my sister teaches in elementary, she was like, you should go get your whatever you got to do to teach in elementary. She's like, because you're a man. And she goes, men in elementary schools can write their own ticket. And then I went with her. I got to be a chaperone on a field trip. And that is the best birth control ever, is to go on a field trip with a bunch of third graders. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, I love kids. I really, really love kids, but not 30 of them at a time going, Mrs. Jackson, Mrs. Just no, I can't take it. So all my teaching's been in the corporate world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a facilitator of knowledge. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So after you did that, what was your first job? You mentioned it was copiers. Is that what you did?
Yeah, I started off fixing copiers, and that lasted for about a year. And then
what was
they
the company?
gave me was a company called Graphic Enterprises in Canton, Ohio, which is weird because now my niece works there. And so I did that, and then they just, my boss pulled me in and said, we created this position for you because our customers are breaking the copiers because they don't know how to run them. He goes, you know how to set them up. So we're going to send you out, set up the copier, and then teach them how to run the copier. He goes, but more importantly, you're going to teach them how not to run the copier. He goes, because that's a problem. And he's, you know, I go, okay, well, like, what do you want me to exactly do? He goes, that's up to you. He goes, just fix it. So I said, what if we make a, I'm going to dub somebody a certified operator. You are the certified key operator of the Minolta 9120. And so what it was is it gave me a contact person, and I knew there was somebody there that knew how to clear a paper jam, basically. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was we had all these service calls where a guy would run out, pull the paper out and click reset, close the door, but we had to pay him mileage and the time and all that stuff. And now we had somebody we could say, hey, is you know, Mark around or Carla? Yeah, we got a paper jam. Can you go clear it? And they clear it out, hit the button, we'd be good to go. So that way our technicians could actually fix things that were broken as opposed to nobody knows what to do. And, you know, I was saying silly things like don't put paper clips in the copier and things like that.
Staples, so, yeah.
Yeah. So that just, and it really worked. We really saw a lot of what we called operator error calls go down. And that's when they're like, oh, this guy's pretty good. And then they said, do you know anything about computers? And I'm like, well, I used to use a word processor back when I was doing my papers in college. And they're like, good enough. And so that led to me being a teacher, which then led to me being the head of that whole computer teaching thing. And that's where I learned I am a worker bee. I do not want to be in management because that's what I call babysitting. And it just was not my thing, especially when I went from being someone's peer to being their boss. That's a hard transition.
Yeah.
And I had a guy once, I'm like, look, I forget that it's Dave, your friend. I am Dave, your boss. And I'm trying to be very nice about this, but he would just kind of make up his own syllabus. And I'm like, yeah, you kind of can't do that. People paid to learn certain things. So that was something I learned along the way. I'm like, yeah, I want to be the worker bee. I do not want to be the manager in charge. And so, yeah, so that's really what I've been doing for a long time. I worked a little in the newspaper industry where I was teaching people how to run basically giant scanners the size of your sofa. That was interesting. And then back in the days of Palm Pilots, for those of you that are, you know, over 40, I can't remember the name of the software, but it was something that worked on the PC. And then my job was to try to figure out how to sync with a Palm Pilot. And that was not fun back in whatever it was, 88 or something like that. So, and then when I went back to school, I then worked for a company called New Horizons. And what was interesting about that is when I got hired there, there were 5 teachers, and all of a sudden there were 4, and then there were 3, and then there were 2. And all of a sudden I wasn't doing training in Ohio. I was driving to Michigan and Kentucky. And I'm like, is there not enough training in Ohio? And I was like, uh-oh. And the one Friday, my boss was in Michigan and she called me. She's like, hey, I heard you just put out a fire in South Carolina. Cause I literally made a class off the top of my head because they weren't happy with what we had given them. And I just walked in and said, what do you guys want to learn? And just basically made up a class off the top of my head. And so they loved that. And she said, that's why it's so hard for this news I have to tell you. And I walked into an elevator and my phone dropped the call. And I looked at my buddy and I said, wait, the general manager is in her office. It's Friday and she's going to give me back. I said, I'm getting whacked. And he said, oh, they can't fire you. He goes, you have seniority. And I said, you know, Adobe Photoshop and I don't. And sure enough, I got out of the elevator and she said, you know, this has nothing to do with your teaching ability. So that's when I was like, that's when I called Lipson and I said, hey, you know, the bad news is I lost my job. The good news is I'm available to work for you.
You know, go ahead.
I've been there 8 years now. So
that is such an interesting story because this is my perception of you right now. The snapshot is you are excellent at solving problems, at really listening to what the pain point is and solving the problem for them. So whoever that audience is, and to be honest, that's the spirit of innovation. And so you totally embody that is what I'm hearing from you. And you were able to produce, honestly, some revenue streams that the companies may not have thought about.
Yeah, well, that goes back even to my first degree. When I got the technical degree, I was a car hop. So again, CarHop is a waiter that runs to your car.
Oh, like the old A&W? I was grew up in Kansas, so I know this.
Yeah, A&W's minus the roller skates. Yeah, so if you look at the 50s, and I would, and then that's simply listening to somebody and then giving them what they want. And if you do it right, they, you know, give you a little extra money. So, but yeah, that's just something I just do, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You're very good at that. So when you got this job at Lipson, they didn't have a problem with you starting your own company and having this other thing on the side. They encouraged it, I'm sure.
Yeah. I had, I'd already done it. I'd been doing it for probably about 10 years at that point. And so the president, we just had a conversation and I said, what are we going to do about this school of podcasting thing? And she goes, I got one rule. And I'm like, what? She goes, don't poach our customers. She's like, you cannot pitch yourself to the customer. She's like, that's not cool. And I'm like, okay. I go, anything else? She's like, nope, that's about it. And then the one day I got asked to speak someplace and I said, hey, who's going? Dave Jackson School of Podcasting or Dave Jackson Lipson guy? And she goes, where would you want to go that we wouldn't pay for it? And I was like, I love my job. So, and then a couple of years into the company, the one day she just looked at me and she said, we're not using you right. She's like, you know, you're a great support person. She's like, but you've got this technical background and teaching background. We should be using this more. So we set up a couple of times a month. I do one-on-one coaching with Lipson people. And then now I'm getting more involved with their YouTube channel. And so it's just slowly, I'm still doing support because I don't want to lose that actually, because that gives me, again, a great view of what people are getting stuck on. But they're slowly moving me into more and more different places, which I love because it's just kind of the way I've always been with whatever job. I get hired at a company and then they go, oh, wait, we could move you here and there. And I laughed when they said they want to start using you in the marketing department, because every job I've had, I end up a little bit in the marketing department because they just go, Dave's a good idea guy. What do you think of this? And so that's always been
Ideas and solving problems. Was this woman Sarah?
No, that was Lori Sims was the president of Lipson for a very long time. Just got inducted into the Podcasters Hall of Fame. Well deserved. So he's awesome.
Congratulations to Lori. Yeah. So did you start the Podcasters Hall of Fame? Who started that?
I did not. That was started by a guy named Gary Leland, who was one of the founding fathers of podcast movement. Back in the day before Apple, he had one of the first podcast directories called Podcast Pickle. Don't ask me why I named it that. And he had been, you know, podcasting again. He'd been around since 2004. And he's like, you know what? We should start kind of finding a way to, you know, give an attaboy, a pat on the back for those people who kind of paved the way. And so I forget when it was founded. I know I was inducted in 2018, but it was probably 2015-ish when they started
How do you get nominated for it?
At the time, he just put a call out to, because back then the podcasting space wasn't as big as it is now. And just everybody kind of pulled it together and we looked for, it's kind of the same process now. You look for duplicates and you're like, okay, anybody who had more than one vote makes it to the next round and you just keep whittling it down. And so I think one of the things I'm going to do next year is, because I mean, I have my own little bubble of people that I listen to and I see, and I participate a lot in Facebook groups and Reddit forums. And so I'm always kind of trying to see what's going on, plus my job at Lipson. So I'm always keeping my eye out. But I think next year when it comes time for voting, I'm going to be like, hey, audience of mine, who do you think I should be, you know, putting on that list? Because otherwise we're just going to end up with a bunch of, you know, I listen to old tech shows. So people always go, well, first of all, people always say, why are there so many old white dudes in the Hall of Fame? I'm like, because when they were young white dudes, they were the nerds that figured out how to podcast. It has nothing to do with race or age or anything like that. I'm like, go back and look. The first bunch of podcasts were, you know, This Week in Tech and things like that. And then you had a bunch of language podcasts got really hot. And then you had comedy came along with the Mark Maron and Adam Carolla and Ricky Gervais. And then you had, of course, Serial, and that was the onslaught of true crime, which is still going on to this day. I'm like, really? Do we need another show teaching someone how to murder somebody and not get caught? So that's always fun.
I have so many questions, but yeah. I want to make sure that we're talking about what your business does. So tell us about your business.
Yeah. So what I do.
Point out your book.
There are a couple of things. The School of Podcasting, number one, has step-by-step tutorials. So it'll walk you through everything from figuring out what to talk about and how to niche down and find your audience to what equipment to pick. If you don't have a website, I have a tutorial on how to make one, and then how to promote it and get listed on all the apps and how to grow your audience. And then, yes, if you have an audience, how to monetize that along the way. So that's just one part of it. And then I do group coaching. So a couple times a month, we get together. Every Friday, we do lunch with Dave, and we all get together and just brainstorm and ask questions and things like that. So there's that. And then the thing I just added about a year ago is I love, again, to teach. And I was knocking on so many doors trying to get people to hire me as a consultant that by the time I got someone to hire me as a consultant, even though that was my big ticket item, I'd spent so much time answering questions for free and spending all this time until somebody's like, yeah, I'm not really interested, that I was like, well, this is dumb. I have people who are already giving me money, and I could be just taking the time that I'm spending on people that keep saying maybe and just give it to them. So I started offering unlimited one-on-one coaching, and people said, well, you can't do that. It doesn't scale. And I go, yep, on paper, it sure doesn't. I said, I'll let you know when that happens. I said, because by that time, I'll probably have trained somebody else who could be a partner or something like that. But at this point, it hasn't happened, and it's been a blast. And consequently, then people stick around a little longer because A, they have a relationship with me, and B, they're actually going in the right direction. And it gives me the ability to kind of nudge people, because people will still sign up and they'll maybe watch a couple videos and then they go, okay, I'll get to it later. So I'm the guy that now comes along and knocks on the door and goes, hello, you signed up. You're giving me money for nothing. And while I appreciate that, like, didn't you want to start a podcast? So between the videos, the group coaching, and then the unlimited coaching, and that community is amazing. It's when I went to PodFest, I said, hey guys, I might not be as quick on the draw for answering emails and being in the community. And they're all talking amongst themselves. They're like, oh, okay. I'm like, here, have lunch with Ralph. Ralph, fire up a Zoom meeting. So they all still got together without me. So it's, and that's what I love. I have Ralph's a tax accountant. Craig teaches at some university in Louisiana. I've got a couple of retired pastors. I have a psychologist. I have a humor writer. You know, it's amazing. I just had somebody that just joined that's a marketer. And I'm like, it's awesome. It's a built-in mastermind. So it's great. A lot of fun.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking at your website right here, and I see that you have something that's extremely affordable, which is the zero free access. And then it jumps over to a monthly fee, and then you have a yearly fee. So looks reasonable.
Yeah, that's the 1-0 one is for, I have a couple of free courses that you can take. And that's for the person that's not sure if they go, well, funny, I do have people like, I want to see if we're a good fit. And usually they're looking for free consulting. And I go, I have 900 episodes. If you can't figure out if you like me or not from those, like, cause I've done free consulting and that never ends well. So I'm like, that's one thing. As much as I love coaching, I don't coach for free. So that's something I don't do. I'm like, look, here's 900 episodes. I've got a YouTube channel. If you can't figure out if you like me or not, you know, because what happens is somebody like, oh, I just want to pick your brain. And I'm like, that's called consulting. And I'll be happy to do that. Here's the link to that if you want to do that. And then I'll point out, I'm like, you do know you can sign up for the School of Podcasting. It's more affordable than just about anybody and get unlimited consulting. And some people just hate having a monthly fee. And I'm like, it's cancelable. You can sign up for a month, blow through everything I have. But you mentioned it is affordable. I might be raising the price because I didn't realize it. Everybody and their brother who has now started a podcast coaching company is much more expensive than I am. And without even trying, I'm slowly turning into the Walmart of podcasting. And so the problem is you're like, well, that guy can't be any good. This guy's charging $7,000 and this guy's charging $79. I'm like, oh, I might have to raise my price, because I did do that when I first launched. It was, I think, something ridiculous, like $5. Because I thought, man, if I could get a couple hundred people to give me $5, that'll definitely keep me in books and phone and insurance as I go back to school. And I had a really good friend that said, Dave, do you know of anything on the internet that you can buy that's good for $5? And I went, no. And he goes, yes, exactly. And so that's when I was like, oh. So I just started raising my price and raising my price. And it was weird because when I went from like 5 to 10, you know, I got a few more people, but it wasn't until I hit 20 that actually people started joining, but they still weren't making a podcast. They didn't have enough skin in the game. So then I went to 50. And then when I added consulting, I went up to 79. So it's been, and every time I think, oh, nobody's going to sign up now. And every time I raise my price, I actually get more customers, which still scratches my head.
That's amazing. So it says become an affiliate. I'm interested in hearing more about that. What is that?
Yeah. So you sign up as an affiliate. And so like today, you could put a link in your show notes. And if somebody clicks that link and signs up, you earn 20% for as long as they're a member of the School of Podcasting.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, we do that just naturally in our show notes. So when it goes out, yeah, it's already going to be there.
Yep.
So that's good to know. And then I also saw something else. I mean, I'm perusing through here. Yeah. But I am trying to find your books, and I don't see your books on your website. Where are they?
Well, I'm glad you said that. It is, if you click on any episode, you'll see it in the right-hand column. But that is, this is a classic example. And this is why I always tell people, you need a coach, because you don't see, you're too close to the, you know, forest to see the trees. So I need a link up there that says products or something and says, oh, here's Dave's book. Because I had a friend of mine that, like, it took me 7 months to write the book. And then we're talking and I said, oh, it's in my book. And he goes, wait, you have a book? Mm-hmm. And I go, yeah, it's been out for about 3 months. He goes, I never hear you talk about your book. And so I think all of us get a little weird when we do self-promotion. We don't want to feel salesy. But yeah, it's not that. I have my own website for that. If you go to profitfromyourpodcast.com, that's all about the book. Because that's
but
the
that link should be on this website, because I can see the book behind you.
Yeah. So if you click on episodes and click on any episode, it should be on the right hand side. And it's usually in the show notes and things like
honestly,
that.
Honestly, I'm not seeing episodes on there. So like that's not in the drop down. That's not one of the things that I go to.
It should be at the top. There should be a yellow word that says episodes.
I'm seeing support, live chat, FAQs, drop a message, feedbacks.
You have gone over to that is the landing page for the courses, which is a hard pitch. If you go just to schoolofpodcasting.com, you'll see a link at the top that says episodes. And that's something
actually in one that says learn.schoolofpodcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. That will have no mention of my book. That's all about getting you into the membership site. If you go to just schoolofpodcasting.com, forget the learn. That's the main website, which will lead you if you want to the community, but you'll see episodes. And then I clicked on an episode and you'll see where there's a link to the School of Podcasting. There's a link to a thing that says a podcast coach in your pocket. So I have a service I use for people that are in like a completely wild time zone that they can order consulting, and it's time-based. So if you buy a half hour of consulting and it takes you 2 minutes to ask a question and it takes me, you know, 8 minutes to give you an answer, you have another 20 minutes left of consulting, and it's all asynchronous. So it's not live like we are now. It's you ask a question, I give you an answer. And so for people that, you know, don't want to get up at 3 a.m. to meet me on a Saturday, it's a really handy way to coach. And then you'll see on the right-hand side, there's a link to Profit From Your Podcast.
I do.
Proven strategies to turn your listeners into a livelihood. So
you have such a good radio voice. You should be a podcaster.
I should. That's it.
Oh my gosh. Where can people, they can buy this book directly off of your website, or is it on someplace else? Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. If you want a signed copy, you have to go to profitfromyourpodcast.com/book and you'll see the option there for that.
So I saw you at PodFest and you were at the Libsyn booth, but your people over at Libsyn have no problem with you going, oh yeah, that's Dave's School of Podcasting. That's his thing. And then he's also with us. I can see that as a win-win for them.
Well, and this sounds, again, talk about things that make you sound weird. I am somewhat of a larger than small fish. That's about as good as I'm going to do with that in the podcasting pond. I know a lot of people. And so if I say I'm going to be at the Libsyn booth for most of the show, there are people that will go to the Libsyn booth just to say, hey, Dave, I listen to your show. I really like it. So in that way, I'm somewhat, he said with quotation marks, an attraction at the Libsyn booth. And I'm still, you know, doing all my marketing and talking to people, but it makes it easy because people are like, well, like, where are you going to be at PodFest? I'm like, oh, just go to the Libsyn booth. So there's that. And they also know there's a class on Libsyn at the School of Podcasting. Now there are also classes for our competition, but I'm always like, again, the logic part of my brain is like, this is what Libsyn does, this is what Buzzsprout does, this is what Captivate does, and then you pick. I always say, now, you know, I might answer your support ticket if you sign up with Libsyn, but you know, I don't kick you out if you sign up with Captivate. So that's the way that works. And they knew that when they hired me. I was Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting. And so, you know, I'm still Dave Jackson from Libsyn. I have my Libsyn hat on. And then, you know, when I'm done, I take off my Libsyn hat and I'm just the guy from the School of Podcasting. So
I love this. This is really interesting stuff here. So you mentioned something about, we talked about this off the air, video podcasts, podcasts, video podcasts, and then YouTube podcasts. What's the difference?
Yeah, what it is YouTube and Facebook pretty much had the market for advertising. And there's this little thing called TikTok came along and took about $4 billion off their plate. And they went, hey, we got to get people talking about YouTube again. What do you got, Larry? And Larry's like, I don't know. Podcasting's hot. And they're like, great. YouTube is podcasting now. And I'm like, wait, what? Did they get a bunch of RSS feeds? Nope. And so there were video podcasts back in 2005, Ask a Ninja, which ended up on Netflix. There were a bunch of video shows. And then YouTube came out and kind of stole our thunder. But you've been able to do a video podcast for decades. So there's that. And a true video podcast you can get in Apple Podcasts and many other apps. Not all of them, because some of them don't know what to do with video, but that's a video podcast. Then you have just what I call a podcast, which most people feel is audio. But that's, you know, I could just say podcast, and podcast means it could be audio, it could be video. And if you wanted to be weird, you could podcast a PDF. But that's the nature of that. And then YouTube came along and said, okay, if you go into your playlist in YouTube and call it a podcast, it's a podcast. So I'm like, okay, so in the same way that if you wave your finger at me and go, male model, it's not true. If you put a check mark next to a playlist in YouTube and call it a podcast, it's not a podcast. And that's what I call a YouTube podcast. And so when you do that now, it goes into YouTube Music, which I don't know about you. I don't know a lot of people that use that. And apparently now it goes to YouTube, and they just recently announced you can suck your RSS feed into YouTube as long as there are no ads in it, because, you know, that's their jam. Don't steal their money. So that's what I call, you know, a YouTube podcast. But even then, when your podcast, when they pull it in via your RSS feed, that's only going to be on YouTube and YouTube Music. And this is YouTube's fifth time they've tried to do podcasting. And the last one, it kills me. They had 3% of the market, and that doesn't sound like much, but it's huge. It was, Apple was number one with about 50 to 60. Spotify's around 18, and Apple was coming in at 3. And all they had to do was make that little icon that said Google Podcast available on all those Android phones, because 70% of Europe is on an Android phone, and they didn't do it. It was, you had to kind of Google a podcast, and then it would show up, and the software was already loaded. It would just, as soon as you clicked on that, it would add the icon. And we're all like, just add the icon, let people see that. Cause that's really what helped Apple back in the day. All of a sudden they made podcasts native to their operating system. And everybody's like, what's this purple button do? Oh, what's a podcast? And so Google has dropped the ball multiple times. And so I'm hoping, you know, that this time it'll somehow kind of come in, but there are YouTubers, right? So a YouTuber is a person that has video on YouTube. And the fun part of YouTube is you can only watch YouTube on YouTube. And so if I wave my magic wand and call that a podcast, that's fine. But I can't watch your YouTube video on Apple, which means it's not really a podcast. And that's where I go, okay, YouTube, it's a YouTube podcast, which is what we used to call YouTube. You know, you're a YouTuber. And what's made me upset about it, and why I was screaming and people like, oh, Dave, you're just an old curmudgeon. I'm like, no, watch what's going to happen. And I always use this analogy. Country music, when I grew up, was right. And it was, you know, everybody had a fiddle and a banjo. Fast forward to, I don't know, the late 90s. And all of a sudden, country went from, now it sounds like AC/DC with a banjo player in the back that you can barely hear. It's very pop music, and they call it country. And I'm like, well, aside for somebody singing with a drawl, it's pop music. And what do you know? Country music is now the number one genre. And I'm like, yeah, because you changed the description. The definition of country is not country. So YouTube hijacks the word podcast. We change the definition of it. And what do you know? The number one way to discover a podcast is on YouTube. And I'm like, yeah, it's because it's not a podcast. It's like saying the number one place to find a YouTuber is on YouTube. And I'm like, yeah. So all the stats that are now coming out about discovery and podcasts that say YouTube, I'm like, no, just realize that when you say they're discovering podcasts, I'm like, they're discovering YouTube videos on YouTube. So they've changed the definition. So all the stats are out of whack now. And I'm still, the only thing I can think of is YouTube was, you know, kind of losing their lunch to TikTok and they had to do something. So they did, and people are talking about it now, but I'm like, that's, you know, and I get it. People always go, are you going to die on that hill? I'm like, I will remind people that that's not really a podcast. Now, I'm not going to fight to the death over it, but I'm like, it's just messing up our stats now, but it is what it is.
There, I heard on the news, I don't know, I think it was last month, that Google Podcasts, or maybe I read it, it was probably Podfest, the Google Podcasts are gone and Stitcher's gone. That, you know, left last year. Are there any other streaming channels that you're aware of that are gone?
That are going away? No, I keep seeing new apps that are being, you know, launched. I forget the one I heard, .fm or something like that. And I saw it. It was really pretty, but I didn't see anything there besides you put in your interests and then it tries to go and find podcasts for you. And for me, somebody who knows what I want to listen to, that service doesn't do anything for me. In fact, it just cluttered up the app. I'm like, wait, where are all the podcasts about podcasting? So the apps I like when people say, okay, Google Podcast has gone away, what should replace it? Because they want me to use YouTube Music and it's not a great app. But I'm like, try Podcast Addict. It's been around forever. And it also is, there's a new movement of, it's been around 3 years, called Podcasting 2.0. And there is a way that your audience can actually stream money to you as you listen, as they listen. So the longer they listen, the more they can stream money to you. Now that money is Bitcoin, and that's where people are like, oh, and their eyes roll in the back of their head. But that's, they're making it easier and easier to convert your money to Bitcoin. And it's really, it'd be like me saying, I'm going to stream pennies to you. Mm-hmm. And the more I like your show, the more pennies. I might give you a nickel a minute instead of a penny a minute. And but if we could get 5% of my audience to give me a penny a minute, I'll take that all day long. And the beauty of it is if somebody goes, hey, Dave, you said booger, I'm going to attack your sponsors because that word's nasty and I hate it and you're offensive. Well, go ahead. I don't have any sponsors because the money that's coming in via that particular strategy is direct from the listener to me. You can't cancel me in that part. Yeah. So that's still kind of cutting edge at this point. It's a little, they have to go a little further to make it a little easier, but PayPal and the Cash App and a bunch of other ones are now making it easier and easier to kind of convert your money to that. And they're adding more things like transcripts now, which just was adopted by Apple. They're using a spec that was created by this team for podcasting 2.0. So that's exciting for the future to see all the different things that are going to be added.
So I had pulled this research. It was from Grand View Research, and it was talking about how podcasting is experiencing such explosive growth. And they said in here that the annual compound growth rate is now 27.6% from 23 to 2030. And it's expected that the industry podcasting would reach $130.63 billion by 2030. That's unbelievable. And in North America, the market share is 39% in 2022. So what are your thoughts about all of this? What would you attribute all of this growth to?
Yeah, it's been growing really since, you know, 2005. Every year it goes up a little bit more. I think part of it is, A, if you look at TV, everything is either some version of CSI or Law and Order, or, you know, it's a doctor show. Yeah. You know, Chicago, this and that. So it's kind of the same old, same old. And look, I get, you know, true crime is super popular and that's basically what those shows are. But radio, especially, I live, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, Cleveland, Ohio. I'm about an hour south of that. And our radio is hideous. It is absolutely unlistenable. And most of the radio shows now have done video. So there's nothing more fun to be in your car driving to work and hear somebody go, "Oh man, look at that, Charlie. Oh, you're like, guys, you do know I can't see the video. I'm in the car. So radio is awful. TV is not great. And people like, I think in some cases, a deep dive. Like even if you have a celebrity on a talk show, it's like, hey, you know, The Rock, what are you up to, buddy? I heard you had a wacky vacation. And The Rock will tell his 2-minute story about something he did on the golf course, and then it's roll the clip. So the fact that like Conan O'Brien has a podcast and he loves it because it's actually he talks to people he wants to, as opposed to your producer going, tonight you're interviewing whoever that you've never heard of and could care less about. So he's interviewing people that he wants to talk to, and they're doing in-depth interviews that are much more entertaining and educational than anything you get on TV. And the only thing that was close was that guy that did Inside the Actor Studio. You know, so I think in the end, it's better content and it's niche. I think I kind of miss the days when you'd go to work and everybody would talk about what was on TV last night or whatever. And the closest thing we have to that is the Super Bowl. But other than that, nobody's really watching the same thing at the same time anymore. It's all time shifted. So yeah. Now you have these niche things where I think my favorite is the chameleon breeder. And this is a guy who talks about breeding chameleons. And yes, that's the little lizard that changes color. And he makes cages for people that raise chameleons. And he gives them tips on how to, I don't know, breed them. I don't know what you do. Light a candle and some soft music or what's going on there. But what's interesting is people could buy chameleon cages cheaper from overseas. But they said they want to buy them from him because it's the law of reciprocity. So he's done something very nice for them. They feel like they owe him, and so they're going to buy his cages. But, I mean, I've seen some very wild niches from the chameleon breeder to one was something like sexy at 70. You know, all these different things that people, when they hear it, they go, oh, this is made exactly for me. One is Adoptees On, and it's all about being a child that was adopted. And the only people that know truly what that's like are other people that were adopted. So you have these smaller audiences, but you have a much more engaged audience that mm-hmm. is like, yes, this is exactly what I'm talking about. So
mm-hmm. I love this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to take a moment to acknowledge our sponsor, Cat 5 Studios, and we'll be right back.
The Intern Whisperer is brought to you by Cat 5 Studios, who help you create games and videos for your training and marketing needs that are out of this world. Visit Cat 5 Studios for more information to learn how Cat 5 Studios can help your business. Thank you, Cat 5 Studios.
So we're having such a good time here talking about this. I could listen to you for all day, honestly. You have good stories. So I'm going to jump into we still haven't finished the first part, so we're going to be accelerating some things here. So who is your favorite thought leader and why?
Yeah, I just discovered this. I would normally say it depends. And I literally like 3 days ago discovered this guy. He was in a documentary on Netflix. His name is Dr. Michael Greger. He runs nutritionfacts.org. So I find him. And of course, what do I do? Hey, does this guy have a podcast? Well, it turns out he does. And it's all super facts-based research. And this is why, you know, the grapefruit diet and the popcorn diet and all those other things don't work. It's all, and he's like, go to the website. I've got the research right there. And at the end of his podcast, he goes, oh, by the way, because he's got a number of books and all videos and things like that. He goes, all the proceeds from my books and DVDs go to charity because I'm doing this because my grandmother was saved by nutritional facts that they told her she was going to die of cancer. She changed her diet. She lived another something like 8 or 13 years or something like that. And he goes, and that's why I'm doing this, to help you save your grandmother, or in better yet, let's save you. And so to me, that just seems like just not what I hear on a podcast. It's all about, you know, if you buy your book and this and that, look at me, I'm on a boat kind of boasting stuff like that. So that was one I was like, I like that guy. So he's got a fan. And I often tell people, I'm like, on occasion, share your why, because some people will get on board just because they're like, oh, I'm down with this guy. He's thinking the way I think. So yeah, he's at nutritionalfacts.org.
Mm-hmm. I looked him up when you said that, and I put him in our show notes that are going to be going out.
Nice.
What is the hardest experience? What Have you experienced a hard life lesson that gave you a deeper understanding of empathy? I really like the story that you tied to this question. So I'm looking forward to you sharing it with my listeners.
Yeah, I was at a church picnic and my dad was a long distance truck driver. So he wasn't like a deadbeat dad, but he definitely was not around. And so there was a thing where they were doing a three-legged race, and it might have even been on Father's Day, who knows, but for whatever reason, he wasn't around. And I watched everybody, you know, giggle and tie their legs together and they take off. And I just remember thinking, like, what is wrong with me that my dad is not here and this stinks and, you know, everybody's having fun and I'm really on the outside here. And so anytime I see anybody, I think that's why I got into teaching, is I don't want somebody to feel like they're on the outside because I don't understand blank. And so I'm like, oh, here, it's not as hard as you think it is. Just do this, you know. So when people are like, oh, I can never podcast, and I'm like, well, have you ever been in the car and your jam comes on and you turn up the volume, and they're like, yeah, and I go, and then the phone rings, so what do you do? And they're like, turn down the radio. And I go, exactly, you know how to mix audio. And they're like, oh, have you ever attached a Word doc to an email? I'm like, yep. I go, then you can upload an MP3 to Libsyn. It's really not as hard as you think it is. So I think that's a big part of why I'm in teaching, is I know what it's like to be on the outside, and it's not a good place to be. So I try to bring everybody on the inside with education.
Yeah, and you do that through inclusion. That's a diversity and inclusion initiative that you're doing. I'm just going to add to that little story. Thank you.
Yeah, tack on an eye. There you go.
Yeah, and there you go. It's inclusion. Favorite superhero and why? This is precious, so I really am looking forward to it.
Yeah, my mom, because I thought about it, I'm like, Superman, Batman, like, no, my mom was a superhero. I didn't realize it until much later in life, but we did not have a lot of money growing up. And the fact that I remember when my sister got braces, I didn't think a thing of it. And now I look back and I go, how did we afford braces for my sister? Like, holy cow. And so she was the coupon queen, and she would figure out like what store had what specials. And she would plot out the most efficient track to hit all the stores, use her coupons, and just make, you know, a dollar stretch as far as she could without being like, oh, macaroni and cheese again. You know, it wasn't like that. And so and just, you know, putting together a house. She died when I was 24, and so I had to help run the house. And that's when you're like, oh, I had no idea like what she did. Like, my dad is still a truck driver and I'm trying to get the grocery list. And my sister is kind of on the spectrum, so she was not exactly helpful in that situation. And so it's just one of those where you don't realize till later exactly what a superhero she was. So it was that's my superhero, would be my mom.
Oh, I love this. That's a really precious memory there. What would you want to be remembered for in your life?
I think just, again, that I help people, that, you know, he you know, here's a guy that brought me from the outside to the inside. And the other thing I hope is I do my best to never discourage anybody or make them feel stupid, you know, because I always tell people, you're not stupid, you're uneducated. There is a difference. So I think that's, I don't know if that'll fit on a headstone anywhere, but that's what I'd like to be remembered for.
Yeah, it will fit, I'm sure. So let's look at 2030. What do you think 2030 is going to look like as it relates to the world? Big out here. Your industry, the podcast and education industry, we'll put them together. And then what would jobs look like? Because 2030, we've got AI now. What's it going to look like? And it's an opinion question, so there is no right or wrong.
Yeah, there's parts of me that are really worried for two reasons. There's a great documentary on Netflix that just shows where, and I'm not throwing shade on either side, there's the left and there's the right. And the people in the right hang around other people that are in the right, and they never even smell, nope, there's no left here. And same thing for all the people on the left. So that we've lost the ability to have a dialogue. I was on a show a couple weeks ago by a guy that's an atheist. Well, I went to church my whole life, and I don't think I changed his mind, and he didn't change my mind, but we had a lovely little dialogue about, that's weird how you think this, and that's how weird how you think that. And I kind of miss the days of where we could have a dialogue and actually learn from each other. So if we don't learn how to kind of just like somebody, even though you don't agree with them, I would like to see that skill come back. And I'm really worried about our kids, just because everybody, now we've got these virtual glasses and all, and nobody has to go outside. The weirdest thing I saw when I was married, I had stepkids and they were in the high school band. And we go home after the game and they come in and I go, oh, where's the band party? And they're like, what do you mean? I go, isn't there a party somewhere you're supposed to be at? And they're like, no, we just get on, you know, we just come home and text and get on Facebook. And I'm like, but you were right in front of them like 10 minutes ago. Why are you getting, that was very strange. So I think just human skills are going to be at a prime going forward. We'll see. And especially, I know you mentioned AI, and AI reminds me a little bit. I mentioned earlier email, that where people are like, how is that doing that? He's already got the email. And I showed ChatGPT to my brother and he's like, what voodoo are you playing with now? And what's interesting is I've already seen people now where you click a couple buttons, you have cloned your voice, and it will basically make a podcast that sounds like you based on some articles that you found. And I'm like, yeah, okay, but is it any good? Yes, it's neat. It's neato. Looky what he did, but is it any good? And so far, all I've ever heard out of anything that's completely AI is it's meh, you know? And so I always go, instead of artificial intelligence, I call it assisted intelligence. Like I like a couple of different tools and I use it to brainstorm sometime. I'm like, hey, give me 10 topics for a podcast and they'll spit those out. I'm like, yeah, I don't like really any of these, but I might use part of 8 and part of 2, put those together. That might be an episode. So I use it a lot to brainstorm. I very rarely will take something verbatim. Number one, never do that. Always read it. I saw one article that was really, really long. That's always another good sign. I'm like, who wrote this 5,000 word tope on podcasting? And in it, it said podcasting has had a discovery problem since the 90s. And I'm like, yes, it has, because it didn't exist in the 90s. That is a discoverable problem. So you can lose your integrity really quick by just copying and pasting something from ChatGPT because it likes to make up stuff if it doesn't know it. So it'll be interesting to see where we end up, because on one hand, we could all be, who knows, doing whatever, you know, like what are people going to be doing? Because we've already gotten rid of the guy at the toll booth. There are a couple other jobs I keep thinking of, like, was the guy at the toll booth making that much money that we had to automate that now? So it'll be interesting to see. And podcasting will either be probably kind of a little bit now. The bigger the money gets in, the worse I see the content getting. Radio is 33% ads. And I keep telling people that is not a benchmark. We're not trying to get to 33. We're trying to avoid going to 33%. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a few shows, especially celebrities, because for whatever reason, they get a little different set of rules. And the first 15 minutes of their show is 30, maybe 40% ads. And I'm just like, please don't turn podcasting into radio. The reason podcasting was so popular in the early days is because it wasn't radio. And people were talking the way we normally talk instead of talking like this. Hey, traffic and weather on the 10s, you know, so it was a little more real. And I just hope they don't ruin it, because there are definitely some people with money trying to turn it into radio. And I'm like, how about you just go back and fix radio? You know, that would be my advice to those people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how they made money. So something that was interesting that you had said was about using AI to brainstorm. I use it for that too. But this is how I liken to what's going on. I'm sure you're going to agree with me. Back in the day, we used to have libraries that would have books, and we had lots of books, and we would take all the books and we would, because they were based on, you know, things that were supposed to be factually true and, you know, peer reviewed and all kinds of information in there so that there's truth. And then we have things that are on the internet, and we have good things, just like we had bad books, you know, plagiarism. We would also have good books. And on the internet, we had true things that could be up there, but we always knew to fact check it. What I believe happens here with AI is it gathers all of the information, so we no longer have to do a Google search. It pulls all of that information, and some of it is true and some of it is not. So if you're going to go and use AI, to your point, yes, you always have to fact check it. You can't believe it. You have to make sure that to a certain level that we're practicing good journalism, if you will, and saying, okay, we have to go and check it and check it again just to make sure that there's truth there, and eliminate the things that are not. So I feel like so many people think, oh, it's on the internet. It's true. Oh, chat gave it to me. It's true. It is not.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of again, going to kind of differentiate is, like, I'll give you an example. There's a show I listen to called Congressional Dish, and Jen Briney is the host, and she actually reads the bills that go through Congress. And Congress doesn't read the bills that go through Congress, and she's found a way to link to, like, a different page in a PDF. And so she'll say, like, well, you're not going to believe this, but in this bill, it says this, and blah, blah, blah. And you can go to her website and click the link and go to exactly what she's talking about. And she has not a lot, but if she finds out later that she quoted somebody or something that was, again, not entirely accurate, she'll be the first to actually say, hey, I thought it was this. It turns out this is what happened. We've got, you know, a different report from somebody who was actually there or whatever. And so she's actually doing journalism. And that's the thing I think that's ruined the news, at least in America, is it's ratings based, not accuracy based. And that's just really, you know, everybody wants to be the first one with the story. And I guess we'll fact check it later. And that's why, you know, different reports are saying people don't go. I haven't seen the 6 o'clock news in months because I remember one morning I was watching it, it was in December, and one of the top stories was Starbucks was going to come out with the red cup because it's Christmas time. And I was like, that is not a story. That's a hidden advertisement. And if you think I'm dumb enough to not know that, then, you know, you're underestimating your audience because, you know, quit making the news. Just, you know, or if you, thanks to YouTube.
There's so much more than that to have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you, I forget what they call them, but there are scripts that go out to all these stations that are owned by the same owners, and every news person in every, you know, city is saying the exact same script. And it's all, you know, so we're getting our news from like two, maybe three sources, if that. And in some cases, none of them have done their research. So, and the stories that should be getting, like, I'll give you an example. The reason I like Dr. Greger is he's not really a big fan of big pharma. But if you think about it, when was the last time you heard a really scathing story about big pharma on the news? Well, you can't bite the hand that feeds. Yeah. 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 And because if they bite the hand, well, there goes all the advertising, because about every other advertisement on TV, and that's only, by the way, in the United States and the Netherlands. All other countries do not advertise drugs on TV. So yay, USA, number one.
So what ethical dilemmas do you foresee about using AI?
Yeah,
not being accurate.
Yeah. I think we're going to see a lot of interesting things around elections. I had an old cassette tape of my grandpa reading the Christmas story. And because of technology now, I cleaned it up. It sounded actually really good. And I threw it into a website called 11 Labs. And I cloned my grandpa's voice. And I called my brother. I said, what do you want grandpa to say to you? And I said, trust me, I've already tested this. It's going to make you cry. And he goes, again, what voodoo are you playing with? And so I made this message. It's like, hey, called out my brother. It's like, I'm so proud of what you're doing with you and your kids and everything you've been doing, blah, blah, blah. I'll see you later. Love, Popo, because that's what we call my grandpa. Sent the email to my brother, and he's like, he goes, now that's not 100%. He goes, but that's about 92%. And it just sounded like my grandpa. So if I can do that, and I've also seen now video, because we've seen deep fakes. So between audio and video, that's really, really good. That's one that really scares me, because when we can't tell the truth, what is the truth anymore? We're lost. And then it's just a matter of, you know, start the clock and see how long it takes for everything to crumble into nothing.
We had so many problems with elections. You mentioned that, you know, 4 years ago, whenever we had our elections, right? It should be coming up this year. And when that came out, it was like Hillary and whoever, what's his name? Trump, when they were running for office, they were both. It was like, which of the two evils are you choosing against? That was the problem.
I heard a stat yesterday that Bill Clinton has been out of office for something like 25 years, maybe more. And he's still younger than the two guys that are going to be on the ballot. And I'm like, that's I know we're not supposed to talk politics, but I'm like, that's gotta be something's broken there. Come on.
Yeah.
Somebody else.
Yeah. Oh my God. That is tragic to think about, for sure.
Yeah.
So Now we're winding down. It's so hard to believe. What is the best mentoring advice that you would like to share with our listeners about the future? Anything that's about the future or just good mentoring advice?
Yeah, probably when I was 16, I got fired because it's hard to believe I was too shy. I was working in a grocery store and just was petrified to talk to the customers. And so I lost my job, and the guy that got me the job basically said, you just need to be more outgoing. And I was like, that's just not my style. And he said, if you act the way you want to be, someday you will be the way you act. Now, today we call that fake it till you make it, but it turns out that works. I just had to pretend I was outgoing. And eventually you just kind of get used to doing that. And so that would be kind of one mentoring thing. And then the other thing is, we were just talking about AI, lean into your humanness. I say this to all my podcast students. And I'm like, look, you know, a lot of people are using this AI stuff, but and they'll take a transcript of themselves and then run it through ChatGPT and then say what ChatGPT interpreted their stuff. And I'm like, no, lean into your humanness, because I'm not sure if ChatGPT can write jokes yet, but they definitely don't have the stories that you grew up living. And that's what makes you. So lean into your humanness.
I agree with you that about that last part, because I work with a lot of people from international, you know, they're from other countries, they're internationals. And because they do not want to have people see them write where they're not sounding like an American, they're here in this country, I go, no, put it in there. That's who you are. It needs to sound like you. It needs to read like you, how you really speak. What are you worried about? Don't worry about it. None of us, I have not yet met a person yet who can write English perfectly, you know, and I was an English teacher. I mess up every day. So I know the best, even the best person will, right?
Yeah. And I always say, if you can make a point in your show with a personal story, do kill two birds with one stone. You're making your point and you're letting your audience get to know a little bit about you. Like when Muhammad Ali died, he was a huge hero of mine, not just for boxing, but for, he stood up for what he believed in. And, you know, just, he was just an amazing guy. And so when he died, I did an episode, I think it was like 8 things every podcaster can learn from Muhammad Ali, because my audience still wants to hear about podcasting. So it was like, okay, 1, super talented. 2, always promoting. 3, really unique. You know, and I just went down this list. So I was making my point of, here's what you should try to do with your podcast. But I was also sharing my admiration for Muhammad Ali. And what it did is, I had people email me that were like, hey, he was my champ too, buddy. And so now I've got a conversation started in email and I'm getting to know my audience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, how can people reach out to you and get to know you? This is what I have for you. I have your School of Podcasting website, your personal LinkedIn, your Facebook and Instagram for School of Podcasting, and then your YouTube channel. Is there anything else?
Yeah, probably the easiest one is schoolofpodcasting.com, and then this one website, powerofpodcasting.com, has everything, Dave, on that. So it'll make your show notes a little less heavy.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that. This has been delightful. I'm very honored that I got to spend time with you. And I look forward to, I'm going to go find your book. I'm probably going to ask for the autographed one for sure, because I much rather have those than the ones that come off of Amazon. And I don't like to necessarily always support the big giant.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was something I never thought of. And somebody said, how do I get an autographed copy? And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, I can buy one from Amazon, but like, I'm not going to come to PodFest or Podcast Movement. How do I get one autographed? And I was like, I never even thought of that. Because to me, it's like, it's me. You want my autograph? You know, so that imposter syndrome kicks in. But
Yeah. Anything that personalizes, it's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Dave. It's been delightful. I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you to our sponsor, Cat 5 Studios. Our video editor is Max Stein. Our music is by Sophie Lloyd. Visit www.e4c.tech to learn how you can recruit, assess, and improve employee learning and your company culture through DEI skills, hiring, and learning. Become an E4C member today. Mention you listen to the show, and you may get the chance to become a guest on the Intern Whisperer podcast. You can support the Intern Whisperer by sharing, commenting, liking, and subscribing on YouTube or your favorite podcast streaming apps.